Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
We're in the new basement studios by the lake.
Beautiful fall. Well, it's not fall yet, but it feels like a beautiful fall day. Just no leaves are falling yet.
Well, but it's still crisp.
Yeah, it's like in the 60s.
That's fally. Mm-hmm. Fally-ish.
Exactly what I'm saying. It feels like fall. It isn't actually fall.
I didn't know.
Do they even call it fall in
No, England? We call it autumn.
Autumn, right.
This, autumn.
Yeah, we call it either here, but.
Because things are autumnal.
Mm-hmm.
Here, they're just brown and orange.
That must be like a Latin word. I never looked that up.
It sounds Latin, yeah. And I think the plural is autumni.
Really?
Yeah. And if you're the only one who's interested, it's actually autonomous.
Yes. Da-dum. Exactly. That's not Latin.
Talking of fall, talking of time of the year, you told me when I showed up to the new basement studios today that we have been on the air now. This is pretty much 2 years exactly.
Quote air, whatever we call
whatever
it.
Whatever we call it.
We've
yeah,
been podcasting for 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years.
I was looking back at our list, and our first podcast was September 16th, 2012. Right? That's two years ago.
And that will basically be 2 years in a day.
It was not in a basement studio. It was at a kitchen table.
That's after right,
which,
yes.
After which we heard, wow, this doesn't sound very good. It was very echoey, and so we said, we need to go someplace with more softer surfaces, which you wouldn't think a basement would be the case, but I think there's enough textures and junk in all of our basements that it softens up the sound.
But 2 years since our very first debut show, which was basically an hour where we just banged on about films and
yeah, I think it was
we did a summer
oriented
movie review, yeah.
Right.
And since then, we have spent 2 years
pretty much every other week.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly on average, because a couple times we did every week and
for
then,
a little while.
Yeah, and then we went to every other week, and then you had your AV-15s for a while.
For a little while.
But, you know, you have other things you have to worry about.
Other things,
you can't do all the time. So, you know, what does that amount to? So it's basically an hour each one. So it's, you know, 50 hours because it's every other week.
I think it's more than that.
It probably doesn't
because
matter.
Because we've done a couple of our specials, hours. 75 to 80 hours of opinion and fact. And laughter.
At least most
at
least
first. On our end.
Yeah. 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 That's right. At least laughter on our end. At least opinion. Perhaps some occasional fact.
But I think this is a nice moment to thank all of you who've listened to us over the last 2 years. I do believe, I don't know who you all are. I do count my dear old mother as one fan.
Yeah, right.
I know there are other people. And we've always done this thing. We've talked about it before where we can look on our internet statistics, and we know where people are listening from.
Rough, yeah, like not like particular, hey, what address?
Yeah.
We're not tracking you, but it does say like Eastern, you know, middle Atlantic states, or I think it even has something by state.
Actually, I think it also has something by cities.
Oh, really?
Yeah, wow. So.
But those cities aren't really accurate because it's just the city IP addresses of like ISP providers. And
while we're not tracking you, we could track you if necessary. So I'm just
no,
that's a threat,
we can't.
Isn't
we
it?
Can't.
No, all right.
So. We're going to get what is that program that Yahoo had to, basically the government was squeezed Yahoo, and they said this week they basically said, listen, we lost our case and we weren't even allowed to tell anybody. We had to give up information. Yeah. And for the PRISM, I think, is the program that Snowden revealed. Hopefully we don't get any interest from the U.S. government asking us to track our particular listens.
I think the only interest we would get from the U.S. government is some sort of quality control. Like, seriously, the airwaves are full of this? Or the internet airwaves?
Exactly. Well, they don't have control over the internet airwaves, thankfully. But, you know, interesting, like you mentioned, you know, your mom, and there's certain people I know because I have regular conversations with them, but there's a lot of people on my list of folks that I talk to that or that I send out an email to of the podcast who I don't talk to regularly. In fact, I had somebody just this yesterday, Virginia-Louisville football game, which, okay, side note, Virginia upset. Louisville was ranked number 21 in the country. I assume
congratulations.
It won't be anymore.
Our listeners in Thailand are thrilled to hear that.
Exactly.
Because we do have listeners
at the
in
football
Thailand.
Game, and it was a 12:30 football game. So it means your tailgate has to start in the morning,
okay,
and you need to have appropriate pregame drinks. So, you know, of course, there were Bloody Marys, somebody where there's a coffee and people throw their, you know, Baileys or something into the coffee. And for my
it's
choice,
very sophisticated
because,
tailgate.
Well, I don't know about that, but sort of. I mean, we're standing out there in the rain having.
Do you eat at your tailgate?
Yeah, we had.
Is there food?
I made a breakfast casserole. The night before.
Oh, really? And you brought it with you?
I brought it with me, in a casserole thing, eggs, sausage, cheese.
Did you take it in the same cooler that we took out with us on our burger expedition?
Definitely not. Although now that I think about it, that cooler was the right shape. I had a real problem. Like the casserole dish, you need one of those things, you know, people have that little insulated casserole dishes. Like it's designed to just particularly hold that. But I didn't have anything like that. So I had the casserole dish in like a huge cooler and almost nothing else in there except for I had like a 6-pack of Boddingtons, pub draft.
Now, I'm going to interrupt you for one moment, because I feel that as we are celebrating 2 years on the air... I'm going to attempt to reference as many of our old shows as possible, which we've already done. We've just talked about the burger show, which was only from a couple of weeks ago. Those of you who haven't listened, listen to the show where we went out and we evaluated fast food burgers. So anyway, there you go.
Right, so I run into this person who I've not seen in 8 or 10 years. And I'm pulling out the body. First of all, it's a tangent on another tangent in addition to the football game. The Boddingtons, for anybody who doesn't know what it is, particularly in the States, is a English pub style draft.
Sure.
Which, interestingly enough, when we were over there, I didn't see it served anywhere.
No.
And so I don't know if it's only a can thing. I mean, is it available in cans there? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Anyway, it has the taste of an, people would be interested if you're, you know, we've talked about the craft beer craze and all that sort of.
On a number of shows.
Yes, right. If you are sort of interested in that, but you don't necessarily like the beers they're pulling out, this is a great alternative for you because it's a classic English-style draft beer.
Very smooth.
Very smooth. It has, if you're familiar with Guinness, which has like little bubbles, it has almost like a foamy, is not the right word, but sort of a thick head to it rather than the big bubbles. That's the way this one's set up, has a little widget in the can to make that happen. And so it makes for a very nice, smooth thing. And I tend to equate it with English soccer. And since that's always on in the morning, I felt like it was an appropriate morning beer.
Okay.
So I have that at the tailgate. I'm pouring a can into a glass, and the person who I haven't seen in years is like, oh, well, that's an interesting beer. Tell me about that. It sounds like a beer you would have had on your podcast about the beers.
There you go, look.
And I was like, wow, that was at least a year ago, maybe a year and more than a year ago, because it was at the old studios, right?
Yeah,
Basement
studios.
Here's a guy I haven't seen in forever. I've emailed him. He's never said, oh, I'm listening to your podcast, but clearly he had been. So thank you, Ed, for the vote of confidence, at least listening to that podcast.
Yeah.
So I'll have to make sure I call him out on that one. So anyway, we had that, and that told me that he was listening to it.
So yeah, after 2 years on the air, anyone who's listened, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And you do exist all over the world. You've either stayed with us, or you've not found a way to disable the download on your computer. One or two of those things have occurred.
You signed up through iTunes, and last time I sent out an email, I had all the various, like, rather than all the episodes, I just sort of said, here's the different ways you could kind of sign up.
Yeah. 'Cause
nowadays, there's so many things, and if you're interested, but you're having struggling with the technology piece, feel free to email us or email me, and I'll let you know. Here's a good way for you to get it where you don't even have to think about it. It'll automatically show up on your phone or iPad or whatever it is.
Because you don't want to be one of those people missing out.
Exactly.
On the next 2 years of the Atlantic Voice podcast.
No,
we have established something beyond the wildest dreams of anyone's imagination.
Something
I have idea where I'm going right
now. Right, right.
So do we want to get on with our show this week?
I think so, yeah.
But we're still going to...
We had a segue planned for that.
We're still going to self-wallow in 2 year celebratory sort of atmosphere here. Mm-hmm. And so we've both now been able to reference two of our shows.
Yep.
But we actually do have a real bit of news to get to start off with. And we're talking about this because if you are new to the Atlantic Voice podcast,
that's right.
One of our first specials, and every now and again we do specials where basically my partner and I lock ourselves in the new basement studio and work nonstop for like 3 hours. And then after that time, we then separate it into two shows. But we work all the way through.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
We've done a number of specials. We've done our Rock and Roll Hall of Fame specials. We do our movie specials. These are all multi-part ones. But the first one we ever did was we celebrated the 50 years of James Bond in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a two-part James Bond special.
Right. Where it was on the eve of the release of
Skyfall.
Probably the most, Skyfall.
Yeah, and I think our stick in that was we went ahead and built our own, we made our own perfect Bond
replaced
film.
Our own stars, music, all that kind of thing.
Well, in the last couple of weeks, any of you who follow this sort of thing will find that the fella, that played Jaws, the actor Richard Keel, he passed away.
Yep.
Passed away.
Richard Dawson Keel. So apparently he opted that his middle name.
No relation to the Hogan's Heroes, Richard Dawson.
I was going to say Family Feud, but probably Hogan's Heroes.
Oh, because where he started was Hogan's Heroes,
more familiar guys there. But yeah, he was the big guy who...
With the
I couldn't decide, like, I mean, it is, those are pretty old movies now. Yeah. I couldn't decide how many people would really know him from those. I think.
Well, I want to make a comment as a James Bond fan. And I did have some thought. And I want to be very clear here. I'm not putting the boot into Richard Keel, but I will put the boot into Richard Keel's character, Jaws.
Well, you see, you're jumping right to what I was going to ask you about later on, but go ahead.
Well, no, but what I wanted to say was, because you talked about people identify him with a character. James Bond, the movie series, does occasionally create characters, even James Bond himself, James Bond, the character himself, that completely sort of surpass the real person, the actual human actor playing that character.
Sure.
Richard Keel, I think, the moment he became Jaws in James Bond, and I looked at his Wikipedia page, he was like 7'2". But in a weird way, he didn't get known as the really tall guy. He was from that moment on known as Jaws. I looked through his filmography. I mean, he'd act out a career prior to appearing in The Spy Who Loved Me. He'd been on, you know, he'd done the circuit on TV shows. He'd been on Starsky and Hutch and this type of stuff.
He was in The Longest Yard in 1974 with Burt Reynolds.
And I'd assumed, but what I'm saying is, up until the moment he became Jaws, he was the really, really tall guy. That was how he was cast, as the really, really tall, you know.
Big guy. Had acromegaly.
But what I'm saying.
I don't know how you pronounce that exactly.
So what is that?
It's a hormonal disorder. That's what led to his excessive size and features, you know, sort of the big head and the metal jaws, to be clear, in the movies, those aren't his actual teeth. And in fact, he's talked about the fact that that was one of the most difficult parts of playing the role, is he had these like crazy metal things in his mouth and make him ill after a while.
But after The Spy Who Loved Me, he almost surpassed his original. He has a second typecasting. He became Jaws from the James Bond films.
Yeah, I'm not typecast, though, because he doesn't ever do it again.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, but that's what everybody thinks of. In fact, I mean, he was avoiding being typecast, and so he did two movies. I mean, we should talk about it. In two James Bond movies. There was Spy Love Me, and then he did Moonraker.
Yeah.
And then he never really did any. So it's kind of anymore, because it's funny because you think of him.
But he was in a couple of other. When I looked at his filmography, he was in Force 10 from Navarone.
Oh, no, but no more Bond movies.
No more Bond movies.
Like, that's my point, is we tend to think of him as if he almost ran through, like, a ton of Bond movies.
No, he was in two Bond
movies. But it's two Bond movies, and the second one, they basically, I mean, it's the only one I think they did where they took a bad guy and they made him a nice guy. Like, they turned him around. Yeah, well, we can get to the movies are. But, yeah, so from there on, he purposefully, like, he could have done just Jaws over and over again, but he avoided it. And I think there was the Inspector Gadget movie with Matthew Broderick.
Oh, was he in that?
He apparently did Jaws in that, like, a cameo, but that's the only other time he did Jaws again. More recently, if people might be younger who don't know this, and actually this movie's fairly old now too, he was in A Happy Gilmore with Adam Sandler, where he played like I can't remember. He was just some sort of supporter of Adam Sandler's who was harassing the big shooter guy, Shooter McGee, whatever his name was.
He was in Force 10 from Navarone, and I'm only mentioning that because that is an early Harrison Ford flick.
That's the only reason you're mentioning.
Well, I mentioned it. Yeah, it's like it's a sequel to The Guns of Navarone, but it's a sequel that shows up 25 years later. Robert Shaw is in it. But it was also a very early Harrison Ford role. He's in that. And then I didn't remember this at all until I saw it on his filmography. He was in Pale Rider with Clint Eastwood.
Okay. Early on, he did a lot of Westerns and things. Because that's where you had a big, tough guy was Westerns.
But I think Pale Rider is sort of like early 80s, 82, 83, when Clint was still, you know, he was still churning out, you know, films on a quite regular basis. Obviously, he was getting towards the later time of his tenure as Dirty Harry. He was doing those movies with the apes, the comedies. He was doing Bronco Billy. He was doing other things. But that was quite a high-profile film. What I'm saying was Richard Keel, the actor, was still showing up in... and I want to be fair here, because he was so tall, because he played an iconic character in a James Bond film, it would have been very easy, and I'm not suggesting he did or didn't do this, but it would be very easy to end up just sort of doing variations of that theme, i.e. in the Inspector Gadget movie, for the rest of his career. Right. But the fact that he was A, able to, and B, you know, he wasn't playing a Jaws-type character in Clint Eastwood's Pale Rider.
No,
you know what I mean? I mean, what I'm saying
guy,
was he was, to an, yeah, but he was to an extent able to maybe surpass some of the caricature.
Yeah.
You know, which I think is quite amazing.
Well, what I think is interesting, so I was listening to a clip. We don't have a thing set up for the clips here, but I was listening to a clip from him in The Longest Yard. He has a quite, like you'd think, of, like in Jaws, he was supposed to be mute, and so he barely said anything.
He doesn't speak until the second movie.
Right. But he had a quite a clear, deep, resonant voice, yeah. And it was a very nice voice, and so I'm sort of surprised that he never got an opportunity to do something more interesting with it. I imagine at some level, again, maybe it's not typecasting, but he's 7'2", and so that he doesn't get that. This opportunity. But if you Google for a clip of him in Longest Yard, you hear him talking, he's, you're like, wow, that guy's got a, you know, he didn't go into acting just because he was big. I think he could be an actor.
I think it's very true.
I wonder, you know, how much nowadays, if somebody came up like that, I could see them getting an interesting role as like a misunderstood, you know, giant kind of guy, you know. Whereas at that time, you know, there's a lot of movies, there are a lot of Western series and spy series, Man from U.N.C.L.E., you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, he hacked out a decent career.
In 1962, he was in a movie where he was the lead called Ega, E-E-G-A-H.
Okay.
And it was a teenagers stumble across prehistoric caveman who goes on a rampage. Where,
yeah,
like,
I think it would be Eagle.
He's like,
Eagle.
I don't know about that.
It's just spelled that way.
All right. But
I don't think he's called Eagle.
Apparently, it's been listed somewhere as one of the worst movies of all time.
Oh, like, yeah.
Yeah. So he was, I saw a little clip of that when I was checking on things where he's a Neanderthal wandering around just outside of Los Angeles or something like that and shows up in town and goes through.
Isn't there a Pauly Shore movie that's like that?
Yeah.
Neanderthal Man, Yahoo Serious? There's a name from the past.
It's not Yahoo Serious. It's Pauly Shore with Brendan Fraser, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Whatever it is.
But it's also different from Biodome, which is another
Pauly
Shore.
Because they unfreeze him. Like, he's like frozen in something. They defrost him and he comes back to life and he hangs around in a Los Angeles high school.
That does sound vaguely familiar, but I'm sorry there was a pause there. I was actually thinking, what was it called?
Yeah.
And I'm now confused whether it's Neanderthal Man or whether it's some sort of ice frozen. Maybe I'm getting my prehistoric.
Write into the Atlantic Voice and let us know.
Yeah, let us know.
What I wanted to ask you about was maybe not even just yourself as a Bond fan, because you are the expert in all things Bond, as we established back in those episodes. If you don't believe it, listen back to those episodes. Well,
two parts.
I mean, listen, people always talk about, I have a bunch of facts. And
you do have a lot of
table,
facts.
But you already had all these Bond facts jammed into your head.
Yeah, I dominated there for just two hours of our 75 hours on the air.
Perhaps more to the point here. More to the point here is that you are geeky enough about James Bond that you're on message boards and things like that. So you could take the temperature of the community. Have you taken the temperature of the community, or would you already know it, as to Richard Keel's place in James Bond lore?
Well,
he lines up with these Roger Moore movies that were really quite bad. I mean, I guess they're bad. They're not probably bad by they're bad by contemporary standards, at least.
If anyone from the various James Bond websites that frequent are actually listening to this show, I'm now going to criticize you all. obviously, when he died, the sites put up the news with, you know, James Bond actor Richard Keel has died. And then the message boards lit up with lots of people paying their respects. I tend not to post there. Not because I don't want to pay my respects, but I feel it's just a cheap way to run up the number of posts that you have. I'm not quite sure why going and going, Richard. I'm not quite sure.
Each step in that sentence, I was like, this isn't making anybody look. Like, the fact that it matters what your stats are on your posting on the James Bond board.
It does, because I'm now a lieutenant commander.
Exactly.
And I'm going to give a shout out to all the guys at commanderbond.net. That's where I post. I'm now a lieutenant commander. No, I don't like to go on and go, oh, Richard Keel, you'll be sorely missed. Not that I don't feel that way.
Because you're almost certain that he doesn't read the message boards after he's dead.
Yeah, probably not. He doesn't, and his family aren't going, oh, I have to remember that Zeph from the Atlantic Voice sent his best wishes. So I just don't.
He's a lieutenant.
Yeah, I'm a lieutenant commander.
Oh, yeah, lieutenant commander.
I didn't post it. It was interesting, though. Some discussions did appear about. Because apparently the news has now hit the internet that in the next James Bond film that will start filming in about 2 months, the next Daniel Craig James Bond film.
Are they going to bring back Jaws? Michael Shannon.
No.
Michael Shannon's going
to
play Gaz.
Well, we cast Michael Shannon. But I want them to do that because then we can sue. Because that was our idea that we've copyrighted or trademarked. Uh-huh. I can't remember what show that was in, but there is a show where we talked about copyrighting or trademarking. No, apparently in the next James Bond film, there is a lot of talk somehow. The script has leaked online and they are bringing back a proper iconic henchman is how it's been phrased. And so I'm sitting there thinking about there are really only three iconic henchmen in the James Bond movies. Two of them are rubbish, and one of them is pretty cool. There's the little fella from Man with a Golden Gun, Nick Knack, Hergé Villegas. And I'm calling him a little fella because I don't want to get my midget and dwarf nomenclature confused. He was little, but to me as a henchman, he's not very threatening and he kind of sucks. There's Oddjob from Goldfinger, who was the first basically, you know, violent sidekick who does all the bruising, who doesn't say a lot. Mm-hmm. And he killed people with his bowler hat.
Bladed hat. Which cut the top off of a statue. That was like, hey,
you were. No, I know you think that's moronic, but I'll buy into that. Here's my problem with Jaws, the character. Very big guy. He's got metal teeth. It is never clear to me in rewatching these movies, well, how does he kill you? He's not a vampire, and he's not a cannibal. So in the end of the day, so what I'm saying is because he had these metal teeth, it's lazy storytelling. Right before he's going to kill either some girl or some other sacrificial lamb before James Bond comes in, you always see him opening his mouth and it focuses in on his metal teeth. And I can't decide, well, is he a vampire or is he actually going to eat you into little bits like a cannibal? I would imagine if I was 7'5" and I'm a henchman, I'm just going to knock you on the head.
That's probably true.
So
Jaws really need the Jaws.
Jaws the character is a bit like, ooh, that's a lot of effort for nothing.
Yeah, he did bite through that cable, right? By the way, he had to use a stuntman for because he's also afraid of heights, and so I didn't realize they shot that apparently on an actual cable car.
Oh, really? Because it looked fake.
Exactly. Well, maybe they did close up shots. It was fake, but then when they did wide shots, I don't know what it is. But it said that he used a stunt double.
So
for that.
He's obviously an iconic figure in the James Bond film series, but. You know, if I'm now stepping into that world, I'm like, he's really kind of useless.
Useless might be too strong a word.
All right, but he's kind of, he seems a rather confused. He is a conundrum of a James. Who's Oddjob? He takes off his hat and he kills you with his hat. And if he doesn't, he's still going to thump you.
So by henchman, you're really talking about.
I'm talking about the side. I'm not talking about the main strongman. Okay, the henchman is actually the word you use when you're on. A James Bond website. That's how you refer to these characters.
Is that right? Well, what do they call the main
villain?
Yeah.
He's called the main villain.
Really?
Yes. That's what you call it, main
villain.
In fact, there's one thread running this morning villain. There's one thread running right now where you have to write a post for what your main villain's favorite line is. I'm shouting out all my guys on the website. How are you all doing? Uh-huh. You don't know who I am, but I am a lieutenant commander, which means I have some seniority.
Are you allowed to give out your name on this podcast as to what your name is on the board? You don't have to.
I'm not going to do that because I don't want to get a whole
just
heap
check
of
all the lieutenant
and then get
commanders
kicked out of the website. Uh-huh. But I've been posting for 8 years now.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to. I have a favorable rating among members. I try and be very even-handed. I'm not half as I'm trying to think of the right word, as I am on this show. I try and prevent.
Antagonistic,
I try and
difficult.
No, I don't try and be that way. I try and present this contrarian argument. But I do try and be amusing, mm-hmm. and I do actually take the time. I'm not an internet troll. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he is an iconic henchman. In the, you know, anyone of a certain age can go, oh yeah, the tall guy with the metal teeth. But to a certain moment, he's kind of a crap henchman. He's, again, I put him on the same level as the little fella who doesn't really use his little fellaness to some kind of advantage.
All right. Hey, I got a question.
Sure.
And
that's the end of our thread.
Is there a name for the people who are all geeked out about James Bond? Like, you have Trekkies? And, you know, they have shorthand names for folks who are, you know, deadheads or, you know, whatever the heck it is. Is there a name? Are they Bondians? Bondites?
I'm guessing so, but we don't refer to ourselves that way.
That's true. I mean,
we do feel, I will say this and I speak for myself. I think we do feel that we are superior to, if you're one of those groups that have a name, well, I'm telling you right now, you're a little bit out there.
Well, yeah.
If you're a Whovian, which is the people like Doctor Who, if you're a Trekkie, we're immediately going, oh, that lot over there.
Yeah.
Who's James Bond fans? Well, we're different. We're kind of suave and sophisticated like James Bond.
Oh.
We don't. Okay. James Bond doesn't wander around going, yeah, I'm the world's greatest secret agent. He just goes around and is that.
We're geeks. James Bond geeks.
Well, I mean, that's it. If you want to
get that, my pacing there. It's like Bond, James Bond.
Yeah,
geeks,
very good.
James Bond geeks.
Yeah. Go. Very good. Yes. No, I don't think we have names.
All right.
Yeah.
So
anyway, he passed away. It's kind of sad.
Yeah. He had apparently had a big car accident in the early 90s. And so that's why, like, in all of the more recent movies that he'd be in, he was on a cane because he really had a cane full time. And I think he is 74.
74, 75, yeah.
Something like that. So that's not too bad for a guy who had a clear, I mean, there's an illness that led to this stuff, to live to age 74, even after a car accident. That's not bad. Here's another interesting tidbit.
Hopefully when the Oscars come around, he will show up in the dead Oscars montage. Yeah. And we talk about that on our Oscars show from earlier this year.
There you go.
Check me down for another reference right there.
One of the things, you know, so where they rehabbed him in the end of that Moonraker, and they have him go off with a girlfriend.
Oh, it was a nightmare. Disaster. Everything about
it was very cheesy.
Everything about
really,
it
really, really bad. Yeah. But they apparently originally...
in that one.
Yeah,
I was going to do an impression now. I'm not going to do it. He says something like, yes, let me help you.
Hard to hit that low register. Yeah.
It was one of those things where his voice fit him, but also didn't fit him, because you've watched 3.5 hours of screen time where he's not spoken. Right. The fact that he speaks at all just seems slightly odd.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why they changed it at that point. So they wanted originally for him to find some giant woman. He's going to go off with some giant woman. And he said, that doesn't make any sense. I'm married to a woman who's 5'1". So his second wife, who he had 4 kids by, was 5'1".
Really?
And this guy's 7'2".
Wow.
And apparently there's some joke, like when she was being interviewed, like how they got together, and she made the joke that, well, you know, we see eye to eye on a lot of things.
Oh. Yeah, very good.
It sounds like a Zeph kind of joke.
It does sound like it, yeah, but I would probably have an entirely different connotation to it completely.
So I think that, unless you have any more on that or anything else, James Bond, we can move on to another topic.
No, I think we got our teeth around that one. Da-dum. Yeah.
There you go. So the next one, which is going back to sports, we were talking about the football game, you know, the big Virginia.
Well, actually,
no,
weren't we going to slip in someone else here?
Oh, you wanted to talk about Oscar, which is another
Oscar Pistorius. He's another one who has some sort of medal.
You're just trying to fit in as many harken back to shows as possible.
Well, no, actually, no. But that was also my segue.
Oh, what?
Go on. Was like, well, yeah, Oscar Pistorius has been behaving villainously, but he also has like a physical thing where you would go, ooh. Do you know what I mean? Like if he's running at with those blades.
He has prosthetic.
Yeah, but it looks kind of like, ooh.
Yeah.
So he could have had a second career as a Bond henchman.
Maybe he does.
Not now.
Well, sure he can now. He may not even go to jail.
All right, so Oscar Pistorius went down. Okay, no.
He ultimately pled. Like, so what happened is, I mean, I didn't.
Well, he didn't plead out, did he?
It's what the paper says today. And it may be, you know, listen, we're dealing with the South African justice system, and we don't totally know all the rules there. But I think basically he was found not guilty of what they call their
murder.
Negligent. No, I don't even call it. It's like called negligent. Well, no, not guilty of premeditated homicide.
Right.
So that took off the table, like basically what we would normally call first degree murder or something like that. So he ultimately, I think it said today, he pled guilty to culpable homicide is what they call it, meaning you're to blame for the death of the person.
So that would equate to manslaughter?
You didn't necessarily mean it, basically, more or less. I mean, the other version I'd seen it described as negligent homicide, meaning you did something stupid, led to getting somebody getting killed, but you didn't really, like, make a plan to kill them.
Okay.
And so, really, in that respect, it's exactly what he had asked for. Like, I mean, he all the time, he never said, I didn't kill this person.
He said, didn't? No, you're right, he didn't. No, it's true.
There wasn't anything disputing that. So, in a way, he basically got everything he wanted. So, now, what's interesting is now the judge has to pass a sentence. The range of sentences that for that could range to nothing to, you know, years and years and years in prison, and it's all dependent upon, like, how stupid they thought he was. Like, how negligent were you in this happening? I imagine he's not going to get nothing, but it's certainly possible. I mean, you could think of examples where somebody does something really negligent or poor thinking, get somebody killed, but you might not send them to jail.
Anyone who's listened to this show for 2 years, anyone who's listened to this show for any short period of time will know that either A, am right, or B, like to be right. If you listen back to our Oscar Pistorius show from a couple of years ago, I think it was in March of 2013.
It wasn't an Oscar Pistorius show.
No, but it was turned on the show.
In context? Did we do that in a bunch of Olympics talk?
No, it was actually in the context. I think we also talked about Richard III that episode.
No, it was. It was Cheaters. It was in the context of...
May have been.
With Lance Armstrong and stuff.
May have been. Oh, no, I think it was on the same show as Richard III.
Anyway, go through our back catalog and you'll find it.
So anyway, another mention of back order shows for me. On that show, you asked me, and I was going to play the clip, you asked me, I think your words were, I'm taking it, you are in full conviction mode. And I immediately went off and said, look, this guy did it. All right, so let's fast forward back now here to the present. I don't want to get caught up in the technicalities of what sentence he's going to get. But as far as I'm concerned, he's pled guilty to something, therefore I was correct.
Actually, I was about to say, as you described that, it's completely the opposite.
But
what you thought is he would be convicted of really killing this person. Like,
sure, that's true.
Of having planned to kill this
person. But
this is
not like an OJ thing where he got off with it completely.
But he never, like, the range of possible outcomes was I killed her on mistake or I meant to kill her. You said convict him of I meant to kill her. This is the most he could hope for. I mean, he wasn't disputing that he did this.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, put it this way, that her family is really pissed off.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, because they're like, they're basically believing his story. His story was, I just made a mistake. I thought there was somebody else in the bathroom, and so I shot through the door thinking it was an intruder.
But
and
he could still get a number of years in prison for that.
I don't think they care. Like, here's the thing. If you're the family of the victim, you care that, and assuming you believe that the person did something intentionally, you care about what's said as much as the penalty. Okay. You know, it's all well and good to say, yeah, sure, he has to suffer, but you want some personal vindication in that the world has found him to be guilty of what you accuse him of doing, which they were accusing him of purposefully killing his wife.
So basically,
girlfriend.
It was girlfriend. So basically, he is guilty of accidentally killing her.
Right.
But we already knew that at the start.
Right, exactly.
So he might have got off.
Yeah,
but in a logical sense.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Is like, I mean, that's the most he could have hoped for. Like, if he had done it at the beginning and he said, "Let me plead to something," he really couldn't have pled to any less than this.
Okay, because I'm actually quite annoyed now at the vagaries of the South African justice system. I'm going to throw down a new marker. If he gets any kind of prison time, I'm going to claim that I was correct. I will concede that if he just drives off tomorrow and goes to his local South African McDonald's for something to eat. Probably, actually, no. Hopefully, they have a different burger chain down there if he's been listening to our show. If he walks away, then I'm going to concede that I was wrong. Now, this is a historic moment. 2 years into the Atlantic Voice podcast, you've just heard me say, I will concede that I was wrong. But if he gets any time at all, I'm going to be I'm going to be claiming victory.
Well, validly or not, that is what you'll do.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Did we have anything else on him?
No.
Nope. All right. So now what I was going to segue into, we were talking about sports. We've been talking more about sports.
Let's do it.
People may know from other podcasts that I'm a Washington Nationals fan. That's the baseball team here locally. In fact,
I think on our summertime show, our Spike guest actually had a pop at you for putting your baseball fanaticism in front of your patriotism.
That's right.
So that's a show you can go back and listen. I'm just whacking up the references. This is amazing how well
we talked about it before, because in the old basement studios, it's actually now it's the blanket that we have on the table to soften up the sound for the table is our Washington Nationals blanket.
That's right.
It used to be hanging up in order to baffle sound around our old studio.
Can I interrupt you for a moment? Because yes, I know there's a lot of people listening to this show who think I could do what those two do. I know that because I have conversations with people.
Yeah, you couldn't put a blanket on a table.
But they wouldn't know to put a blanket. What I'm saying is this is a full-on operation with all the secret tips of the trade. That's why this show sounds so good.
Yeah.
Because one of the secrets, if you want to be a successful podcaster, is to put some sort of sound cushioning material your table.
I'm waiting for the day that we line the inside of this room with that egg crate stuff, the foam.
Oh, yeah.
That's what really kind of – you're getting rid of all the echoes is the idea. The other thing, we switched to the two microphones.
But this show doesn't echo. Echo very much since we moved to the New Basement Studios, which actually was on our show about a year ago. The whole show was entitled New Basement Studios.
Keep
working. There's another back reference for me, and I'm killing it here.
Keep working. I don't know who you're competing with.
Oscar, but... I'm competing with you.
Oh, no.
Oscar Pistorius may get away with killing it, but I'm killing it.
Okay.
Da-dum.
So... the Nationals right now have the best record in the National League. You got two leagues.
This is something our Taiwanese listeners might be interested in because they like baseball.
Yeah. So, people in America and people not in America probably aren't going to know a ton. So,
the Icelandic guy is completely lost.
Very as briefly as I can do it to tell you how the playoffs work for baseball.
Do it.
Once upon a time, it used to be just the winner of the National League played the winner of the American League in the World Series.
Right.
Then they started developing playoff levels.
That was back in the day of like The Natural. So if you've seen that Robert Redford movie, that was basically how it worked out then. Right.
Most recently, I forget what year they did it, they added in a wild card. People might be familiar from wild card from the NFL, which is you basically see now there's three divisions in each of the National League and American League, and each of the leaders goes to the playoffs, obviously.
If you've seen the movie Major League with Charlie Sheen and Tom Berenger, I think that's what happens in that one.
Right.
Yeah, so there you go.
Wild card is an extra team that has the next best record. Actually, you'd be familiar with it from a lot of soccer qualifying, football qualifying, sure, where you have groups, but then somebody with the next best records gets to go into the playoff stage or the knockout stage, as they call it. And then a couple of years ago, they even changed it further to say instead of just – because it was one wild card team, which resulted in four teams from each division, nice and neat.
Yeah.
Well, they said, let's make this more exciting. We'll have two wild card teams.
Which is now, what, five?
Yeah, but the two wild card teams have to play each other in a single game playoff to be the wild card team to go into the next round. And the idea was to create some sort of one game event excitement.
I have learned to appreciate – but I'm sorry to interrupt you. I have learned to appreciate baseball as I've lived here in America. I do enjoy going when I've accompanied you to games.
Mm-hmm.
I've enjoyed going. I enjoy it as an experience. I think it's the most dumbest thing in the world, though, that to move on to the next round, you play a single game when you've played a season of 162
games. Well, and
I find that just really weird.
It's crazy, like, too, because one of the reasons why baseball has these long things, and each of the next rounds are like five rounds, seven rounds, is because your different pitchers are so different.
Sure.
Like, you have one great – so if you create a one game, all you're doing is you're making them match up their best pitchers, see who gets through, but then it kind of screws everything else up. So, moreover, before – like, this has always existed. This is not an official part of the playoffs, but you could have people tie in the records. And so they have tiebreaker games potential. Like, so it used to be, like, when it was a smaller playoff, it was like you might have to have a tie on top of the division.
And
so
you'd
play a single game playoff. They still have that as a possibility. Like, so if the wild card teams are all tied up, you could do that. All this is background for the way that at least the Nationals, and I'm sure it's everybody else, sells postseason tickets.
All right, so let me.
It's absolutely offensive.
Let me frame. The Nationals are like any other. I don't care where you live. I don't care what the sport is. But the chances are, if you follow a major sport of some kind and you actually go to games, the chances are there are more people trying to go to games than there are tickets. The Nationals have a stadium that I think holds about 47,000 people. Like, you can physically get 47,000 people.
Yeah, they
should
call them ballparks, not stadiums, but yeah.
Whatever. Do you know how many season ticket holders they have, of which you are? Because, again, baseball's an interesting animal now. If you have a season ticket to, say, you know, Manchester United or one of these teams in a sport like that, your season ticket pretty much gets you into every game of the season. But because baseball plays so many games, They play 162 games. They have 81 home games. I think it's very rare that anyone... Do they do season tickets for all 81 games? I mean, that's both time commitment and a financial
but
commitment.
But realize that almost... like I'm part of a group that shares
but
them.
This
like,
is what I'm
there's
saying.
Very there's yes. I know of some retirees and the like who do have a whole season and they'll go to most of the games.
Okay.
Or give away some tickets. There's a lot of companies and businesses, obviously,
sure,
because that's easy and it makes it easy to give away.
But what I'm saying is, you're in a group of people that sort of share the tickets. So what that means is there may just be one seat with a season ticket, but it is owned by five different people,
right?
Because obviously, real life intervenes and. You know, your season ticket still gets you into 25 games.
You know, it's a game almost every day. I mean, like, basically, they'll take one day off a week when they're in travel or things like that. But otherwise, it's a game almost every day. So that you were saying, I'm part of a season ticket group. It's a block of four seats, and we have season tickets. There's, like, 12 people. Everybody has different size shares. We do a draft at the beginning of the year to pick your games and all that process.
Okay.
So now we get to postseason. We know the Nationals are one of the top ones. We know there's no way they're going to – like, I mean, theoretically, there's a mathematical possibility they could go down to the wild card level.
Sure.
But it's next to nothing.
Okay. So they're in. They're into the postseason.
Right, right.
Exciting times.
Yeah. So they come out and they say, okay, folks, we're looking at the postseason possibility here. Anybody has season tickets now has an opportunity to buy – the block of postseason tickets. And you have to buy the block. You can't be like, I'd like to only buy tickets for the first round and then we'll decide later about the next round.
You go all the way in.
You got to buy the whole thing, the whole slate through.
What happens if they don't make it? Will you get money back on your credit card?
This is my whole story. You're anticipating
I'm sorry.
It all right. So, moreover, they won't let you do that unless you pay for next season's tickets. Like, so it doesn't even matter that you have the tickets now. You've got to put down money for next season in order to be entitled to
in
get
its
this.
In its entirety or just the down
it's
payment?
It's a large down payment, and it's sort
of better. Cool. Yeah.
They do give you an opportunity, like in our group got an opportunity, and some people in our group apparently called the Nationals directly to make the case that, listen, we've been holding season tickets since you guys came back here. Give us a break, and you get more. You
did they give
more
them a
season
break?
Tickets. Yeah.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
So more season tickets. Like, we were – originally it was like you get more season tickets up in the upper decks, and ours are about mid-level tickets.
Okay.
They aren't like super fancy. They aren't like the $100 tickets. They're also not like the $5 tickets up at the top. So we have a block of four and another block of four nearby in the same section, one section over. So, but you got to buy them for everything, and you got to pay for most of your next season's tickets.
There's actually a phrase for that in the ticket business. It's called a scam.
Yeah, right.
This is a ripoff.
Right.
You're being ripped off.
Well, and then they make you pay for. All the game, like you have to pay for a tiebreaker game. A tiebreaker game doesn't even happen every season. You have to pay for the tiebreaker game. You have to pay for the wild card game.
What happens if they lose in the first round of the playoffs and they don't make it to the next round? You've still paid for those tickets?
Yeah. Yeah. Then each one of those rounds, except for the World Series, see, because they're uneven numbers and they go back and forth, you don't really know whether you're going to have, like in a seven game series, whether you'll have four tickets. Or three tickets. You don't even really know the dates of the games. They just recently announced when the dates of games are, but it all depends upon which side of you're on. The World Series games, because that's home field advantage is decided by the All-Star game.
Okay.
We do know the National League's only going to have three games. It's going to have the middle three games. You know what those dates are.
But they're charging you for three there.
But they're charging you for four for each of the other rounds because you might have four.
You might be the higher seeded team.
But you might not even have the four games.
Right.
Then, like I said, the play-in game, the tiebreaker game. You got to put down the money for all these things.
And you don't get money back if they don't make it.
Right. Well, what happens is they apply it to the next season. Like, so whatever money you put down, they said, thank you very much. Sorry you didn't end up having those games. We'll just apply that to that next season tickets that you bought.
So I'm going to figure this out now. There are 81 home games in a baseball season.
I have to add something here. The tickets obviously don't cost the same as they do for regular season. Like, let's say our regular season tickets, I think they're $50 a piece, which is just insane in and of itself. The tiebreaker game is $55 for the same seat.
Okay.
The wild card game, which we also won't have theoretically, $80 a seat. The division series game, which is the next round, $80 a seat. The championships round, which is the National League championship, $140 a game. The World Series games, $275 a game for each one of those tickets.
All right, I'm fine with that because that's a final. Right. I don't have a problem with the price increase. I don't,
except for the fact like so the you know like
I mean I think it's rather there's seven steep
games.
In general.
There's seven games at $275.
I get that, so but I don't have a problem.
So you've got to buy that whole block out. Like, you know, like if you lose in the first round, you've still paid for all the World Series tickets and all that.
All right. So they've said that they will deduct from next season's bill.
Right. They'll just say, well, thank you for money. We'll hold on to that for the next 6 months and we'll apply it to next season. Not even 6 months, but we'll apply it to next season.
You're not happy with this arrangement.
Well, it's a little bit. I mean, it's so much money to be made from them off of this sort of stuff. I mean, you could do this stuff. I mean, it's all electronic anyway. You could do this stuff at the last minute. And then the kicker is because we're a season ticket group, we have to have a draft for these things.
Okay.
So now, luckily, I have a decent enough share. I think I've already.
But everyone's going to get at least one ticket to one game.
No.
In your group?
No. Well, they'll get a ticket to a game, but you know there aren't going to be those games. Like, let's say, the wild card game and tiebreaker game, between all the seats we have, there's basically four selections for it. So there's eight selections. We set up this draft list. If you're in the bottom eight, you know you're just going to be paying money for something that will never happen.
Okay.
But, I mean, even if you pick the ones that might happen, most of them won't. Like, even in the best-case scenario, you'd have to go to the World Series and get all the way through. And even in that scenario, not all the games are going to get used. So you're putting all this money in. I mean, the guy who runs the group, I mean, bless his soul, has to deal with the math of all these different numbers and figure out what everybody paid, you know, for next season to apply it into next season and the different size shares and all that sort of stuff. It's nuts.
Basically, you're getting ripped off by the team, and yet you're also, in a perverse way, ripping yourselves off.
Well, you're not ripping yourselves.
But Someone in your group is going to get scammed.
Right. Well, they don't get scammed. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, they'll get their money back. It's and again, just the whole
this
process.
Is the difference between you and I. Let's rewind about 20 minutes to my membership in a James Bond website.
Mm-hmm.
I was more than happy to say, yep, I'm probably going to stick it to the other guys with my statement. You are, by even discussing this topic, at some level, you are venting to your group about the unfairness of this whole thing.
I'm not venting to my group.
Yeah, you are.
Why? I don't care about my group. Isn't doing anything unfair. The group is dealing with what the Nationals have to deal with.
How many tickets? Okay, let me ask you a question. How many tickets do you envision your? How many different games do you envision? Let's say the Nationals go all the way to the World Series,
right,
to the finals. How many games do you envision you'll get to go to?
Three.
But it could be, would it be three in one round? Could it be one in each round? Could
Depends
it all be
three?
I mean, is that luck of the draw?
Well, it's a draft. And so everybody picks what they want to do. I think it's an interesting sociological experiment because it determines how big a gambler you are, right? So the first game I picked was in the championship series, but it is guaranteed to be, if we get to the championship series, there will be a game that I have a ticket for because it's not the last game.
So you're bypassing.
It's either three or four.
Oh, so this is the
You're always
going
to go four thing. You know that round, if you get to that round, you're going to have four games at least. So I picked a ticket that will either be game two or game four, depending upon whether we're home or away.
Okay.
Or have home field advantage or away. But it's guaranteed to happen. So if we get to that, so there's the gamble that maybe we'll lose in the first round, won't get to see it, but it's worth it for doing this. Now, the World Series, like, take the most extreme example. The World Series, just even if the team is great, odds are they're not getting there. There's eight teams that are going in. At best, you know, just if you do it randomly, obviously some teams
have it's one in five, isn't it? It's one in five.
Well, because I'm assuming the wild card out, basically. Like, so basically there's ultimately, once the wild card game is played, there's four teams on each side.
So that's what I'm saying. It's a one in five chance. Let's include the wild card. All right. It's a one in four chance that the Nationals will make it to the final, not one in eight.
Right. So now you look at that and you go, listen, if the World Series gets here, I kind of want to go.
Okay.
You know, I'm definitely going to want to do that. But do I take that game, it's $275 just on the thought it might go, and give up the possibility of picking a game that will definitely occur? Like, put it this way, here was interesting. The first two people who picked game one and two of the first series. So they are guaranteed to go. They are basically guaranteed to go. But now they've given away a pick. Those games are not going to be deciders because they're only like game one or game two. what you'd really like if you were to look at the statistics, which game is going to be the most likely to be a big deal?
Yeah.
Maybe game 6 of the World Series, right? Is that the do or die game? Or you know, of course, game 7, but most series don't get to the game
That's
7,
right? And some series don't get to game 6.
So now
six.
You got
to
decide what to pick.
What kind of man are you?
Well,
I want to know.
Let's, I went middle because I went championship series. Part of the problem is I know in the first round – I can't go to the first two games. I have other things to do on the dates that those will be, okay. Assuming we can kind of assume that we'll have home field advantage because
I would change the date of our podding to allow you to go.
I appreciate
that.
That's very nice of you.
I just want to throw it out.
I do think there's a good possibility that the next pick I'll make will be the World Series. Because I would be totally bummed out if the end result of this is that, you know, they get to the World Series and I don't go. If they only get to the division series and they lose and I don't go, I don't really feel that hacked off.
Okay.
But if they get to the World Series and I haven't picked the World Series tickets, I'll be kind of bummed out.
All right.
I mean, how many times, just think of all sports.
No, I get it.
How many times does anybody get to go to the national championship of their sport kind of thing and see a team that they like actually play?
No, I mean, that's one of the big issues with live sports in general is how the average fan is getting, not priced out to an extent, but just sort of getting elbowed out in general.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the other – I mean, it is really interesting. You know, these things – that's the other thing. If you really wanted to do this as a money-making opportunity, you take that World Series ticket to $275, you'll be able to – like if you decide
– you'll be scalping that bad boy.
$500, $700, whatever, because people in Washington are going to pay top dollar for that level of seat for the World Series.
When are you going to know what tickets you've got?
Well, we're in the middle of the draft right now. Okay. So, like, I know I got that first one. My next pick comes up in two or three, and, you know, people have to do that process.
And so how many games – so you –
We're doing, like, an email draft. It's not like we're all standing in a room. That's why I don't really know. It's because we're doing emails to each other saying, oh, I picked this one.
But right now, you – let's say the Nationals go all the way.
Mm-hmm. I would expect to get three because I have four picks.
Okay.
But one of my picks is that bottom eight.
Okay.
Because I have, you know, that many picks. And it's almost guaranteed. Like the only thing I can think of is it's possible that somebody, when confronted with a deep pick, will be so cautious that they'd rather just spend the $50 on the wild card on the tiebreaker game, and be like, okay, I'm only out $50, then spend the $275 and be out that. So there's some possibility that my bottom picks.
Okay, I understand it, but if to get back to our original point about the way that the team are doing this, the team, the organization, not your group of guys,
right.
You're going to front up for those tickets, but ultimately you're not going to lose that money.
No, no.
It will just get applied. You'll just pay a little bit less when you're forking out for your seats next year.
Right.
So
right.
You are front. Okay.
I mean, and I do think, like, if you call up the Nationals afterwards and said, listen, I can't renew or something, it's not like they go, oh, we seize your money. You know, it's a deposit. You can't do it. I do think there are potential outs, but I think it isn't really necessary for them to do it this way. I've done a lot of other, like, concerts and things where they immediately gave you back your money if you didn't end up having, like, we went to a concert where they canceled one day of a 3-day festival for rain. Well, they immediately send the money back. They weren't like, well, you should renew for next year and we'll keep your money till then kind of thing. So, it's what sports teams do with the money. Because, I mean, listen, think about how many millions of dollars they end up taking in. Just the interest on it. You know, it's worth their money to put there. And
yeah, they're ripping you off. Don't worry about that.
Kind of thing. But this led me to thinking about other ticket processes. And so one that is – it's not similar, although I'm curious as to what you hear, because I don't really know a lot about Premier League ticket buying. I do know that you basically – to buy tickets, you have to be in a supporters club in the first place, or at least at any of the big – I don't know if maybe the smaller ones are better. For example, if you wanted Chelsea tickets – and I said – and this is – I was sort of surprised. Chelsea's stadium holds 42,000 people or
so. That's correct. I think it's 41,975, actually.
Wow, you have a number.
If you think I'm geeked out about James Bond, I'm geeked out about stuff like
that. I read something that said only 8,000 tickets are really sold to the public for each game,
which I assume
means everybody else's season ticket or corporate
everything else, or visitors. Everything else is prepaid.
Unlike in America, there is a visitor section, visitor sales. It's almost like college football where there's always a visitor
reciprocity.
Everything
is pretty much the bulk of any team's tickets are prepaid for. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Whether it be for any of those examples, I'm a member of Arsenal Football Club now. I'm what's called a member now. At a certain level, my £100 gets me access to video on the website. and I basically get to troll around.
A magazine or something like that.
Yeah, you know. I get an email from the manager.
Oh yeah, well yeah, he's got his big famous thing. Arsene Wenger is the manager at Arsenal, and his, that's like his big thing.
I'm not gonna lie though, I'd like to complain to the club and go, if I'm gonna get an email from the manager, I want an email address that I can respond to because he needs to hear what I have to say because I'm paying £100 a year.
Yeah,
I'm a member of the club. I get access to all areas of the website. And then I can't remember what level of membership I am, but I could apply to, if I wanted to go to a game, I could apply to get tickets via my membership.
Right.
I don't know, because obviously I don't live in London anymore. I do not know what my odds would be.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, how do they decide? I mean, is it a raffle?
I would imagine it's, like anything, you click on and you either get or you don't. I would imagine it's first come, first served. I would think. They can't wait around until the Wednesday night before Saturday game going, okay, everyone who thinks they might come this Saturday, let's do the raffle.
Yeah, no.
I think it's first come first.
So they used to, like, so college basketball at Virginia, they used to do, I don't know if they do it the same way, they did, like, because there wasn't enough seats for students. They were free. You didn't have to pay for them. But you put in, basically, like, in a raffle or a random thing, and so they would randomly allocate the tickets. And now other places they do, like at Duke, at least they used to always line up in tents, you know, like they'd say, oh, the tickets for this game are being released on this date, and they would all line up and try to get in, get the best tickets. Or maybe that was even a line to get in. I can't remember. But
now this,
but they, that's like a – you could do either one of those. My impression is that they must reserve some amount, because I hear about people coming from America and they say, oh, I'm going over there
They do reserve a certain number of general admission tickets to either, like, you can't roll up on the day,
right,
but you can get tickets to a game depending who you know and how you go about it, or whether you're a member.
Good story, maybe.
Yeah, but I do think the reality for pro sports in general, or not, you can apply it to any business model, these people want the money up front. So that's why for the baseball, it's about season tickets and let's get your money for next year. But I do think it also, at a business perspective, you also want to go the other way and you want to make sure that people feel that they have a chance to go and see their team. Again, I mean, this membership thing is only about 6 or 7 years old. Let me correct that. I've only been paying for membership for about 6 or 7 years. I actually used to just pay to be a viewer on the website because I knew, I live 3,000 miles away. It was more important for me to get into the sections of the website to see stuff. And then about 5 or 6 years ago, they then made an announcement that, don't worry, if you've been paying for the website, you now automatically have been reclassified as a member. So I suddenly get all this other
stuff. Isn't it partly for security, too? Like, because this way, you know, since there's some
history of problems. We also know where tickets are going.
Right, well, because you can't transfer tickets. Isn't it kind of like we experienced with the Olympics? It's, like, very difficult to transfer a ticket once you've bought to somebody else, so it's very difficult to scalp the tickets.
Scalping tickets or ticket touting in England is actually illegal.
Yeah,
but people do get arrested now, but I do know...
But the point is, you can stop it by requiring people... Like, you just say, hey, listen, you have to give your ID to come in on your ticket.
No, but what I'm saying is, I do think StubHub now exists in England where you can have a exchange of tickets. The only thing is, I don't think it can ever be. I've never bought a ticket from StubHub, so I don't know if there's a limitation at StubHub that you can never pay more than face value. You can get stuff for less, but you never pay more than face value. That sort of, because ticket touting in general was always a way of attempting to shift tickets on for more than the face value of the ticket.
But I'm just and more
that's
thinking
what's
like
illegal is someone profiting.
You can shut it down. Like
me giving you me not being able to go to the game and saying, Eric, why don't you go instead? I can transfer my ticket to you. It's illegal if I say to you, my £50 ticket, you need to give me £100.
Yeah, it's just
possible. That is technically illegal.
In modern technology, it's possible to really shut it down entirely, just not enable people to sell, because you just make a ticket not into a thing that you can hand around and into something that you have to be able to do something with.
And we're very aware of modern technology on the show because we did a whole episode about robot technology. And there's another reference for me. I really know our back catalog.
Yeah, so I just quickly ran a search for Chelsea, just easiest to type into the thing. You can buy tickets for the Man United Chelsea thing. The first thing that comes up when you pull it up on StubHub, important event of information, all tickets for this event are sold by authorized Manchester United ticket agents. So in other words, it's preventing out-and-out resales by the random person on
so
the street.
So if you have a ticket to that game, you cannot put it up on StubHub.
Right.
Whereas in this country, you can.
Yeah.
StubHub is basically an internet marketplace.
We like free enterprise here.
Yeah.
And look at that. It's almost no tickets. I mean, like that's all the three tiny sections that have any extra tickets, so...
But the tickets, but if you try and get hold of one of those tickets...
Sure, Alex Ferguson stand.
Oh, well, there you go. You will pay face value.
Yeah, maybe.
They can't, other than,
I mean, they're
like,
pretty expensive, but I imagine that's what they cost.
I can't imagine they're not allowed to suddenly charge you more.
I mean, these don't look like particularly nice tickets, and they're £330, so...
Each?
Yeah.
Oh, God. It's not cheap. It is very different. I want to say this now, that... Sports has definitely become, I don't care where you live.
Like an end line ticket halfway up is £500.
Sports is definitely, and I now don't want to sound like one of those people who starts every sentence back in the day, but going to sports has definitely become, I don't know how it compares to inflation, but going to sports is so much more expensive than it used to be. I remember when I was a kid, I could go to the Arsenal and pay the equivalent, a pound, the equivalent of a couple of dollars. Now I'm into my indeterminate middle age, I cannot believe, I mean, £500 to get into a game? Are you kidding me? Even these baseball games, playoff games, and I understand playoff games should be more, $140. It is interesting how the sports experience is... Not the experience itself, maybe it's all another show to decide if going to sports is different now than it used to be. But in terms of the economics of it,
yeah, well, listen,
it's,
you know,
really it's, changed. It's like going to the theater,
it sells. I mean, like, why should
no,
the
I get
sell,
that.
You know, it sells for it now. The one of the biggest differences is the ability.
Which now says to me, I'm sorry, again, I've been interrupting you a lot today. I want to say this because we do a lot of movie shows on the Atlantic Voice podcast. If you go back, we've done movie previews for the last 2 years.
You don't get to count that as two shows.
No, I won't. No. But I'll count it as one for, again, getting a reference into an old show. Mm-hmm. Going to the cinema, I always moan about how expensive it is to go to the cinema. Mm-hmm. But
usually
for 2 hours of entertainment now, I don't care what country you live in, that's a really good deal.
Well,
it's a really good deal.
The
cinema has become a really good deal compared to going to the theater or going to sports.
Sure.
And that's all.
But those other things involve live people, and they only happen to the people there. Like the thing with the movie is you just print it a bunch of times.
I get that. I get
that. But it's a relatively decent deal. Yeah, I mean, listen, that's what the market bears on it. What I think is going to be interesting, and this is we get to a whole nother, in fact, I think we have talked about this before, is with TV, they're going to have to hit the brakes at some point. I mean, across the board, attendance at live sporting events, other than those big ones, like the big teams that sell out everything, is down. Like even places that you know of that sell, all the attendances are down at places overall. College, like they just ran some articles recently, college football season ticket sales everywhere down over the last 5 years.
Really?
Yeah, because everybody's like, I got it on my TV. Every game is on TV. It used to be not all the games were on TV. Now all the games are on TV. They're better done on TV. And it costs that much more people are going to switch over. Now, as long as the companies, corporations that buy them and give them away and things like that keep buying the tickets, it'll keep certain ones up. I think maybe what we'll see is more segmentation of price. Like right now, even at the Nationals, there's a section you can get $5 tickets for. And they only sell them on a walk-up basis. I don't know that they ever sell out, but they have like a section that's $5 tickets.
But that's because the money involved in these enterprises now, especially for sport, the money that you get from TV is so great, the fan doesn't matter. The fan is just someone you need to make your TV show better. What I'm saying is, for example, and it's interesting because I'm now going to make some sort of a statement. I don't know what it is. I've just said that the film, the going to the cinema is arguably your best value for money. The only way movies make money is by people, in general, is by people going to the cinema, right? And that's a very cheap ticket because they need you in there. Sport, on the other hand, a sports team, yeah, they're making some serious money from 60,000 people paying on average £100 or $100 or whatever it may be. But ultimately, that money is dwarfed by
the billions
they're getting from TV contracts. Right. And so I find it interesting. I don't know what point I'm making.
We would have to actually get real stats on that. But I do imagine it's part of it. I mean, I think what the sports teams would be better served doing is, I mean, they soak you for the concessions when you're in there. I imagine the margin of is so big. It's just drop the season, drop the price on the tickets. I would really love some sports team that sort of take that initiative, drop the price on the tickets, see how many people show up, see how much more money they make off concessions, see how it all, you know, makes for a better game day atmosphere. I mean, that's the other thing is the richer the tickets get, the worse the crowds end up to a certain extent. Sure. Because if the only people who are buying are 50-year-olds who, you know, work at law firms or whatever it's that, or are not likely to be your rabid fans, I think it deteriorates the environment.
I think ticket prices tend to be the one variable that can allow them as a business to make more money. Because as much as I've said that total number in revenue is dwarfed by the size of their TV contract.
Well, they all negotiate their TV contract, particularly in baseball. No, but most teams localized TV contracts.
True, yeah. But I find that interesting.
Anyway. So we could have gotten into a whole nother thing about the college things we were talking about, because that's all based on donations. And they give priority depending upon how high your donation is.
Yeah.
There have been some efforts on the pro level to do something like that through seat licenses
they
and call the like.
It, yeah. They but, did do yeah, that. When they built, more. It was interesting. When they rebuilt a section of the old Arsenal Stadium, they actually did do something where you had to renew your season ticket and then you had to pay a bond or something to help go towards the construction. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, fleecing the customer is not a new thing.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
It's just the degree.
It's just how it's called and how it's done.
Yep.
And again, I think there's a lesson in here for you your baseball tickets. Yeah, there's a lesson in here for you.
Okay, what's that?
If you allowed your patriotism to define who you were, you wouldn't be so bent out by everything here with the Nationals. But because you admitted that your baseball team was more important than your country, in a weird way, there is some justice here.
That's not what I admitted, but okay.
Are we at the end of the show for this week?
We are.
Anything else? Anything? 2 years. Do you have any opinions about 2 years?
Maybe 1 year too long.
Oh, he didn't mean that, listeners. It continues to be a lot of fun. Yeah. And I do think it's important. We always joke about. I do want to thank everyone out there who listens to us. I don't know if you just click on and listen to 5 minutes. I don't know if you listen all the way.
The unfortunate part is they're thanking them all, but they won't have listened to this far.
You don't know that. And you know something? Because we know where you live, we'll be coming by. This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.